So, as mentioned, I'm the, well, we've got some funny internal titles, but I think the closest one that would relate, be relatable to most is product manager. I oversee all the mining products within ASI. So to give you a little bit of background, oh, it looks my slide's a little off. A little background on who ASI is. We are an autonomous solutions provider. We started about 15 years ago as a spin-off from the local university, Utah State University, where John Deere asked us to do some automation. The university didn't want to, so like most automation companies, we spun off and started commercializing ourselves. We're located about an hour and a half north of Salt Lake City. Logan's the nearest big town. We're actually in a small little town called Petersboro, which is about a total of 100 people. So from 9 to 5, the population doubles. And just our hiring practices, we've been trying to pull industry experts from some of the biggest companies in the world, trying to take what they know from some of their previous employers. So what we do, our main focus at the moment is mining. About 50% of what we do deals with mining automation or semi-autonomous systems. But we also deal with proving grounds. So one of our big industries is dealing with the automakers. We deal with three of the big five in Detroit, where we automate their durability testing. So where normally you'll have a shift, well, per hour you'll have four test drivers on a track. They're not allowed to drive more than 15 minutes per hour just because it's so abusive on their body. We automate that testing. And what we found is that we can be a lot more consistent than a manual driver, where a manual driver in these tests varies from test to test about 20%. We have an accuracy of about 1 to 3%. So we're being able to better test equipment and isolate problems and learn from them. We also, as I mentioned, we were working with John Deere. Currently, we're working with Case New Holland and their autonomous programs. And then I can't mention the name of the company, but there's a large electronics manufacturer out of Japan that we are partnered with to produce autonomous security guards. So in large refineries, airports, these little robots wander around and just make sure the area is secure. So from all of these different industries, there's a lot of lessons learned, a lot of things that we can share between industries. It's been very helpful. So as I mentioned, we're out in the middle of nowhere. I don't know if you can tell very well, but we're up in the mountains. We've got about 100 acres, three test tracks where we do durability testing 24 hours a day. And just recently, we routed fiber up the mountain so that we can help to troubleshoot, control, and assist worldwide partners. For example, we've got some locations in South Africa that we can remote into and assist in diagnosing problems. So that's a little background on who we are at ASI. So I've got about 20, 25 minutes to share the lessons learned on fielding autonomy, which I could probably go on about all day. There's plenty to learn from it. I broke it down to seven lessons that I think are most pertinent. Number one being simplicity. If it's not simple, then you won't use it. We've fielded systems in the past that after a couple months of using, it was hard to diagnose a problem, hard or complicated to use, and so companies just give up on it. They don't want to deal with it. It requires more effort to run than it actually benefits them. So we have some guiding principles on simplicity, and that's a photo of one of the walls in our building where we really try to focus in on making simple products so that it doesn't require a team of engineers and technicians to keep a system operating. Oops. follow them home. That's another guiding principle we have, and it's about as creepy as it sounds. So our CEO, Mel Torrey, years ago had the opportunity to meet with a guy by the name of Scott Cook, who was one of the co-founders of QuickBooks. And just in conversation with him, he got to the topic of how did you survive when you were up against Microsoft money. They were trying to release a financial product, and QuickBooks obviously came out on top. How did they weather the storm of a Goliath like that? And he said the secret was is he followed their customers home. Back in the day, when you'd go to Office Depot, Office Max, Staples, wherever it is, to buy software, and you'd buy it in a box, he said that they'd send their employees out to stand there, help in the sales process, and when they convinced someone to buy the product, they would ask if they could go home with them, or go to the office, help and see how they would install the software, see how they'd operate the software, see the struggles they had with the software, see the things they got excited about with the software, and really learn from that and implement those findings into their product. So that's one of the guiding principles that we've taken on with our product is usage tests. We bring in groups of farmers, we bring in groups of miners, and we sit them down in front of a computer, and the skill range varies from an illiterate goat farmer from Africa to a very tech-savvy engineer, and we just try to gain an understanding of how they would use the software. So we give them a list of tasks to move a haul truck from this location to another location, to cancel if there's an emergency, and just we've got cameras on them, and we watch where they click, how they click, if they reach up on the touch screen or if they use their mouse. So there's a lot of lessons learned that we've gained from doing these use cases. Also, we've tried to build into the software, much like on a website, we can monitor the interaction with our software, so we can see where people are clicking, where they're hovering, where they're putting their mouse, so that we can get a better understanding of how the software is being used or underused. So that's our way of following people home. Along with simplicity, it's not just a matter of being simple to use. I'll just skip that one. My UX guy added that. It needs to be simple for diagnostics. If you can't keep the system running, or again, like I mentioned, it takes a team of engineers to keep the system running, then it's going to easily be discontinued. They will go back to the old way. So we've been able to set up a system within our program where the software is constantly monitoring through the CAN messaging the health of the vehicle, the health of our system. It will send alarm, and through our use cases, we've been able to tell, you know, where does a person click if that error occurs. They click on the vehicle. So when you click on the vehicle, then it takes you to another screen that shows, you know, a further drill down of what problems there are, and all the way down to a fuse was blown. So we've tried to make the interface very clean and simple and user-friendly, so that diagnosing a problem is just as easy as operating the system. So lesson two is system feedback. Just an experience with Ford in their durability testing. Every time they have a prototype, they release it to the track. They take our kit and move it from one vehicle to the next. It takes them about 2 hours to do it. They do it several times a day. And sometimes, early on, they didn't do it the same way every time. One example was there's some actuators that control the braking, and the braking wasn't configured properly. And so when the system tried to slow a vehicle, the brakes weren't responding as they should and overshot a point. No accident, but it made us realize that we need to have that level of feedback to know that the system is operating in real time correctly. So there's some things that we've integrated in the system and some solutions to that, like frequent brake ramp checks, obstacle detection checks, so known obstacles within a circuit that it can sense every time it passes it and knows that its obstacle detection software is working properly. So there's just a number of systems that give us that feedback to ensure that the system's healthy and that the truck system's healthy. A real problem in autonomy is the potential for sabotage. Not everyone is excited about the idea of autonomy. There's jobs, you know, that could be replaced or made redundant by autonomy, depending on how it's rolled out. And so there's a real threat of a trial being sabotaged. And so we've found it necessary that our system is intelligent enough to constantly log all of the telemetry data of the system, the video feeds of the system, the inputs through the software, so that if there is ever an incident or an occurrence, we can go back and play them back all synchronized together with the timestamp and know exactly what transpired before and after. In fact, we've been asked to integrate microphones into the system so that if an incident occurs, we can see what the conversation was preceding that. So, just for the success of autonomy, we feel it's very important to ensure that we can replay any event that occurs. One of the key selling points of autonomy is the gains in safety. And there are a lot of gains in safety, but I'll be the first to tell you there's some concerns that are raised after you implement autonomy that weren't seen in a system prior. Disclaimer, this is not our truck. We didn't run over anything. This is a stock photo we took, but there in a good, well-designed system, there's a balance you have to make between false negatives and false positives that the system might be giving. In our company, we've deemed false negatives are a non-starter. This system needs to be designed well enough that you'll never have a false negative. False positives, on the other hand, are a lot more frequent in a system that you're trying to eliminate any false negatives. And so there's a balancing act. You've got to make sure that the false positives that you're getting within the system, like an obstacle detected that's not really there, are infrequent enough that they don't become just a nuisance and commonplace. There's a real threat of an operator becoming so complacent, an autonomous operator becoming so complacent when there's an exception that comes up in the system saying, for example, obstacle detected, and the operator's instinct after, you know, the thousandth time is to just click ignore and just continue on the path, that one of those times there might actually be a real obstacle there. So there is always that threat, and we've been designing the system so that we can try to eliminate as many of those false positives and nuisance exceptions as we can so that we don't have that level of complacency. Some other safety-related issues are with complacency as well. We've had customers, for example, we had a tire manufacturer who we automated some durability testing for them so they could put hours and miles on tires. And after we integrated and delivered the system, we went back a few months later just to check in on them, see how everything was going, had a nice meeting with them. And then when we're leaving for the day, They were turning off the lights, and our employee said, "Well, what about the vehicle?" And they said, "Oh, don't worry about it. We just let it run, and it eventually run out of fuel, and we'll just refuel it in the morning." So there becomes a complacency and a trust in the system that there really shouldn't be at this level. One day we aspire to that, but autonomous vehicles need to be monitored. Another issue with complacency is we had a deployment in South Africa where the site became so trusting of the autonomous system. They were intended to run the autonomous system segregated from the rest of the haul truck fleet and from the rest of the mine. And after a few months, they found that the haul road for the autonomous system was a shortcut to another area of the mine, and we found a lot of manned vehicles driving on our autonomous haul road. And even to the point where one of the shift supervisors driving down the autonomous haul road decided to take a phone call on his cell phone, stopped his vehicle in the middle of the road, answered the call, and then all of a sudden a big cloud of dust came over the top of him. And he looked in his rearview mirror, and sure enough, there was a truck parked behind him. And it's that level of complacency and a trust in an autonomous system that, at this stage of the game, is not safe. So those things can be overcome through process and monitoring and strict control of your site, but they could become a problem. We had in our ag deployment an orchard that we worked with in Texas that we were doing a demo, and this farmer who had worked quite a bit with one of our autonomous vehicles, we asked if we could come out, do a demo with some potential customers locally, and brought out one of the Case New Holland dealers and made a whole show of it. And during the presentation, the farmer wanted to make a point of how good the obstacle detection sensor worked and jumped out in front of the moving vehicle. And our engineers, they died. They couldn't believe he did that, because they wouldn't even do that, and they built the system. So there's just, again, a level of just casual and trust that should not be placed in an autonomous system at this point. We haven't had any problems yet, but there really needs to be a focus on process control when deploying autonomy. So new math that we've discovered in doing this for a while and talking to potential prospective customers, there's a lot of things that can change. There's so much of a mindset and an operation that relates directly back to an operator and personnel. Shift changes, when you inspect a vehicle, the size of trucks you decide to use because of the availability of operators, which directly affects the width of haul roads, which directly affects the grade of the ramps and affects the life of mine. So there's a lot of things that cascade after you remove an operator from a machine. One of the predominant ones that we've been talking to customers about right now is the selection of machine, where no longer are they going straight to the 400-ton truck, but maybe using 10 40-ton trucks to replace it. And what does that math look like? And there are some compelling arguments for it. There certainly doesn't fit in every scenario, but there's certainly some more flexibility in what you can do. And that's what we've seen from agriculture, in our involvement in agriculture. No longer is it an arms race for the OEMs of farming equipment to see who can produce the biggest monster that they can deploy. They're finding that it's much more economical, manageable to deploy numerous smaller vehicles. It's easier to maintain. You don't have to have the same infrastructure to maintain it. And when you have a server running algorithms that are controlling and eliminating queuing at the shovel and eliminating queuing at the crusher and timing your vehicles just right at intersections, then it doesn't really matter how many vehicles you've got crawling around your site. The software will manage that. Return on investment. Some of the major, go-to savings that you get from autonomy are a decrease in salaries and in wages that you pay out at your site. Consistency and better uptime are some of the majors, and then just the safety gains that you get. But some of the things that are not quite as obvious are the maintenance, and everyone talks about the maintenance gains, and I haven't seen any real convincing concrete information on everything's fairly premature at the moment on what those savings and gains are. But we had, again, a tire manufacturer who came to us and wants to get involved with autonomy because they have seen in their mining tires they're getting 300% life out of them. And that's mind-blowing, and don't quote me on that. That's not my number. But if you think about it, these machines are accelerating perfectly. They're stopping perfectly. They are running smartly, so we're integrating with tire pressure monitoring systems, so we run at the proper speed when the tires start getting under pressure. So there's there's real potential that those kind of savings can be there, and the same thing translates into fuel savings as well. One of the mine sites that or mining companies that we work with, and we're looking at deploying a system with them, one of those costs per truck that aren't normally factored in is they've got a small town nearby that they support and have to make housing available, and so for every truck they deploy on their site, they have to build 10 homes in this neighboring town for all of the operators and the overhead that come with adding a truck to your fleet. So it's those kind of costs that are not normally calculated in your ROI for autonomy. So with a lot of people are scared of jumping straight into autonomy, and rightly so. It's a big move. There's a lot of other systems out there that get you benefit without quite the same exposure to risk and lower cost, and those are things like partial autonomy. So assisted spotting, as we talked about earlier today. There's also some technologies out there that help you to swing, dump, and return on a shovel. There's one of the products that we have developed for military and convoys in military is this right here, which actually was inspired by a dog leash. The owner of the company was walking his dog with one of those retractable leashes and decided he could get all of the information he needed from that leash to follow his dog perfectly. So from the coil and recoil of the spring on the string, he could see the acceleration, the deceleration, the velocity. He could even tell that the direction that the dog was going and at what point he made that choice based on the length of the string at that moment and when the angle changed on that feed. And so, it's just a little Kevlar string you could replace with your shoelace, and that box gets integrated into the CAN bus on a vehicle, and all of a sudden you can take control of a truck and line them all up. So that's what we were doing in a military application. And it works in reverse too. So last point, mitigating liability. Yeah, there's a lot of unknowns with autonomy, not a lot of laws, regulations, best practices out there yet. So in our effort to try to mitigate liability, our chief of engineer, he sits on a lot of the regulatory bodies and tries to help to implement those best practices and get some of those regulations in place. And then designing a good system so that it's as fail-safe as possible. And lastly, just make sure you've got some good insurance. So just a quick video. I don't know if it'll... So we've done some automation on some articulated trucks. This is at a sand pit testing site we did in South Africa. This is one we did here in the US. And we've been able to show that you can get ROI on automating vehicles as small as 40-ton articulated trucks. So this is a bit more of a commercial video, but this is our autonomous slot dozer. That's one of the things that we've tried to distinguish ourselves as being OEM agnostic. So for those mining operations that are looking to field a certain brand of truck and a certain brand of excavator and a certain brand of auxiliary gear, then we are able to operate them all through our autonomous system. Any questions?
What do you what do you think the biggest challenges are going from a system where you do have your engineers being sheepish about standing in front of equipment to a world where they would be happy to?
Time. A lot of time. I think the technology's there. I don't doubt that at all. In fact, I would say statistically you're better off jumping in front of a haul truck with a laser on the front than jumping in front of one where you have a potentially distracted driver. I mean, statistically, you're better off, but I'm not going to take on that liability.
You put good insurance rates there, I think, in the last...
Yep.
The insurance has reduced the rates because of this system.
Oh, I said get good insurance. So just make sure your insurance covers for autonomy.
My question is, the insurance are already aware about the system and are charging less, more money because of this?
Because we are not paying the premiums. The sites pay the premiums. I don't know what difference there are in premiums for that. So I couldn't answer that. We're just trying to work with some of the insurance companies because a lot of them are curious about the systems and how to best cover for potential incidents.
Thank you.
Yep.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.